Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's up, my peoples? I hope you're doing well. Now, how'd you like those live Goldie episodes? Now, if you haven't checked them out yet, definitely go back and do that. You don't want to miss out on everything that happened on the night of the live pod. And be sure to go over to HueyMorgan.com and sign up for my mailing list and get a heads up the next time we do a live pod, plus the inside scoop on whatever else is popping over at Huey HQ, and there's plenty. And of course, you know the drill. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the pod. The more positive reviews we receive, the easier it is for new peeps to find us. Okay, the formalities are over. Now it's time to get on to my guest this week. She's a little bit different to the lineup so far, but she's still a musician and a total G, so I know you're going to like her. Jensen Chero is a New York Times best-selling author of You Are a Badass and You Are a Badass at Making Money. She's also written a semi-autobiographical novel called Don't Sleep With Your Drummer, a sentiment I absolutely endorse. As well as that, The Straight Girl's Guide to Sleeping with Chicks. Yeah, Jen is a badass New York City musician, writer, who got tired, in her own words, of being broke as a joke and set out to learn about the world of self-improvement. She journeyed to L.A., high-fived peoples at seminars, did all that corny kind of stuff that made her cynical New York sensibilities very uncomfortable. And as she shares on the pod, it started to work. Now, she's a best-selling author, success coach, and motivational cattle prod. Again, her words. And she shares some pretty cool stuff on how to get what you want in life. And she does it in a really easy-to-understand, non-corny way, which I find very, very cool. So open your mind and your ears to a bona fide badass. This is Jen Sincero. So how's your day going, okay?
That's great. How's yours?
Excellent, excellent. Just hanging with my two monkeys at the pool out here in Somerset.
Nice. Are you with that place that Kat took me?
The Babington House, yeah, we were over there. I've been a member there forever. But it's always kind of tricky because I'm a New York guy with tattoos. So whenever I show up there, they think I'm kind of crashing.
And well, I thought it was more that rock and roll there, no? Well, or maybe you're sort of the trailblazer.
I don't know if I'm blazing trails, but it just seems like a lot of the people that work there who may be a little bit young to know who I am or whatever, just think like, wow, this guy's just trying to scam. So
right.
They always hit me up for my membership card, and they're like, where's your membership card? And I'm like, if I don't have it, like last time I was there with my son, they kicked me out, and the lady was real mean to me.
Hilarious.
But hey, that's the way it is, being a badass. And I'm glad that, you know, I get to speak to an actual bona fide badass here on the podcast. Because it's awesome. I mean, like, I love the idea of people becoming their own hero, their own badass. And I just think it's awesome. My wife gave me the book that you signed for her. I'm reading that. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
How to be a badass at making money. And you know, before we get into this, because I know that I've done interviews for the last 20 years, right? And sometimes it's a little boring to do a little bit of the back page. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm game for whatever. So whatever you got to do, I'm happy to do it.
Well, I just want to let people know who are, you know, who may not know who you are, which is probably very few at this stage, though. Like how you got into doing what you're doing. I mean, you are, you know, how many times do you have a bestseller in the New York Times list? Every book you put out?
Hell no. These last two.
The last few, but still. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I know. It's insane. It's crazy.
I do particularly like the one about warning people off the drummer.
I know. My drummers, the bands I've been in, they really don't appreciate it. But, you know. And the distinction there that's very important is don't sleep with your drummer. You can sleep with other people's, just don't sleep with your own.
Yeah, your own drummer is probably not a good idea. So, you came from, I guess, a rock and roll background to a large extent, creative background, I should say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was in rock bands for like, I don't even know, 10 years. And I've always been a writer and a performer, and yeah, and I was having a blast doing all of it, but I was broke as a joke. So that was sort of how this whole self-help thing came around, where it was just like, really? This is the best I can do? Like, I'm still living in a damn garage and I'm 40? You know, it was just, I just couldn't take it anymore.
I hear you there. Where were you coming up? Was it LA or New York or?
Well, I was in New York. I was in New York when I was in my first band. I was in New York and I was working at a record company and just in my 20s having a full-on blast, and then moved to New Mexico, and that's where I really started playing in a bunch of bands and really sort of went for the whole musician thing. And then I was there for 4 years, and then I moved to LA, and that's where I stopped doing the music thing and started really focusing on the writing thing. And the money thing.
Well, you know, I think it's really cool because I did read a bunch about you, because I always like to find out from other people as well. Like, I know a lot of people who know of you, and the one thing, whenever I mention your name, and this is a true thing, everybody smiles. When I go, okay, hey, you ever hear Jen Sincero? Everybody I've spoken to like smiles and goes, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's so nice to hear.
That's an awesome reputation you got, you know?
No kidding.
And I know you wrote something that was really interesting where you said, like, it's you know, you can be happy and broke or happy and rich or unhappy and rich or unhappy and broke, and you take the rich thing all the time. And I remember on my first record, I came up in Lower East Side of Manhattan, right? So I came from very humble expectations, right? So when I was younger, there was always that, maybe that rapper mentality where money is good. You know, money's not a bad thing. It's not bad to want money. But as I started making money, I started seeing the people around me really kind of acting like they didn't really like the money they were making. And it was kind of like a bad thing. I was like, y'all are knuckleheads, man. You know, it's good to have money. It's good to be fiscally aware of what's going on. And you had a good epiphany, I think, when you were, I think the story goes where you were, you were kind of like doing crochet work or something. And you're like, screw this.
Yeah, knitting. Yeah, my big money maker. Knit, spend like $50 on each ball of yarn and knit things that take you 5 hours to knit and see if you can sell them for $20, you know? Right. It was really not the wisest financial move on my part.
Well, I know dudes that, you know, flip keys to make money, so I think probably the idea of, you know, flipping yarn is probably a little bit safer.
Yeah. I don't actually know what flipping keys mean.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just assuming. I'm just assuming you are totally on my wavelength all the time because you're so cool. But it, you know how dudes always talk about the drug game and how, like, if I make a little bit of money, I'll just buy a key and then I'll flip it and then I have double the money. It's just the silly rapper mentality. But
kilo, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, a kilo. Exactly.
Thank you.
No, that's. Without getting too rapper
speaking
on.
Speaking to the cones, honey.
So where do you think this whole idea of being the nobility in the struggle kind of lets people kind of not strive for more?
Where does it come from?
Yeah. Is it society? Is it, you know, the you previous know, generation it's, screwing with us?
I've really been trying to figure that question out myself. I mean, it's so pervasive that, you know, your attitude towards money is so refreshing, that it's good and it's what you should strive for and that it's healthy. But the majority of people do have so much judgment and guilt and shame around money. And I think absolutely it's society, but then it's like, why does society do that? I think a big part of it too is our focus is in the wrong place. We focus on all of the unspeakable and horrific things people do out of greed. And let's be clear, it's not about going after making money, it's out of greed, which is very different from money. And we tend to confuse those two terms. So when we focus on that, then we prohibit ourselves from being, you know, I don't want to be one of those money monger, you know, greed pigs.
Yeah, I don't want to be a horrible human being. So, but that's weird how it transcends when people kind of, they don't think about greed. They do think about greed and being wealthy in the same breath, which is, I always thought that was a real big disconnect.
Absolutely. And so, and you don't even realize it. And it's so, you know, that word noble, such a great one. It's like, it's so noble than to not want money or to have money, because it means you haven't done anything bad to the planet or fellow humans or animals or whatever. That actually is why I was so excited to write this book. One big part of it was to shake people up and to be like, hello, are you even aware that you're running your life on this unquestioned belief that money is bad?
That's sick. I mean, so when I read your book, right, there's a lot of stuff that, like, you know, people, I guess, can't see the forest through the trees a lot. And it's also great, like you mentioned, how you got into the whole, like, self-help idea, where you're like, you were sick and tired of being broke, but you made a conscious effort to not be broke. You know what I'm saying?
And for so many people, because it's so loaded and there's so much judgment on it, to make the conscious effort to not be broke is right there huge, because focusing on money is bad. And if you are focused on money, it automatically means you are going to do horrible things for it. It automatically means you're going to do stuff you hate for it. It automatically means you're going to compromise your values for it, right? That's what we in our bones believe, so we don't let ourselves do it. And if you want to change your financial situation, you have to focus on making money. It's not just going to happen magically by kind of sort of doing stuff. So for me to make that choice, it was that one shift right there was enormous. And believe me, I got judged by my friends. I got judged by my family. I got judged by myself.
Yeah.
But
did you beat yourself up over it when you were counting your money?
It took me some, you know, to go out there and admit, like, you know, I've done the creative thing. I've done the rock band thing. I've done the writer thing. I'm doing the money thing now. I'm ready to make money. And it's a dirty word. You know, we don't talk about money in our culture. And, so that is why it's such a big deal. It's, you know, I compare it to sex in my book. We're all supposed to be really good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all supposed to know what we're doing, and you're never supposed to talk about it. You're never supposed to ask anybody any question, you know, because it's part of everyday life. So it's just a, I think waking up to that aware, you know, that to the loadedness around it is one of the most important things you can do as a first step to getting rich.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, because it seems to me there's a lot of, and because I have a house in England, I'm kind of privy to this Anglophile kind of Victorian angle on a lot of things that the British have. But it seems, you know, I think when it comes to, like, you know, sex and all that kind of stuff, but, well, I like the way you kind of drew the comparison to that, where you're supposed to be, like, amazing at something that you've never tried before. It's like, you know, you actually have to practice to be good at certain things, like playing guitar or whatever. So when you first started trying to make money, there was obviously, you said there were a lot of pitfalls that you ran into, but what do you think is the biggest challenge convincing yourself that you deserve it?
I think that's a really big one. It's like admitting that you want to be tied up and, you know, just like Batman, you know, whatever it is, like, yeah, being okay with it. The shame. Man, shame takes the fun out of everything.
It's true. It's, I mean, I got young kids. They run around butt naked any chance they can, right? And
I'm so jealous of that.
Yeah, you know, and then there's a thing where, you know, they're at a certain age where they can get away with it, but, you know, their kids, I saw a couple kids that are maybe like 2 years older than my son, probably about 8 or 10 or something, and they're like, man, I can't run around naked no more, and that sucks. Because they don't really understand why it's a bad thing. And with making money, do you think people don't really understand, you know, why it's not a bad thing, because they don't talk about it? They think if you have money, you're going to turn into a Bond villain or, like, you know, kind of weird recluse who, like, you know, uses his money to fuck with people's lives. It's like people actually think that.
Yeah. And so, and, you know, and just like sex, you can't even make the first move because you start talking about it and you're shut down. You know, we don't talk, it's not okay to ask somebody how much money they make. It's not okay to celebrate making a ton of money. It's seen as, you know, showing off or
in bad taste. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So I think that it's like any other relationship in your life. It's, you're having a relationship with money. So if you think of it that way, it's like, when I'm in a relationship with another person, I talk to them, I pay attention to them, I compliment them, I see their beauty, I see their faults, I pay attention. And we're sort of taught not to pay a lot of attention to money, because if you focus on it, there's something quote unquote wrong with you. And we keep coming back to this, but it's really, it's so subtle and so powerful.
See, I guess when I was growing up, I must have had a different upbringing, because I was raised by my mom, right? So my dad wasn't around. My mom worked a lot, and she had a good job. She was an editor for trade magazines in New York City. And I always, and what I was instilled in me was that money equals freedom. And you talk about this in your book as well. And it gives you the freedom to be the person you want to be and do the good things. I thought it was good because you kind of rationalize having money to your old self, which is brilliant. Like, look, if I had money, I could do good shit for homeless people. I could do good shit for the animals I see on TV all fucked up. You know, I could do all this stuff. So it's not a bad thing. And are we our worst enemy when it comes down to, like, you know, making money?
If we're acting on autopilot with these unquestioned beliefs, absolutely. And so that's why we always say in the self-help world, awareness is the first step to self-transformation. Like, wake up to what you're believing, because the second you start questioning, it's like, you know, maybe deep down you think, you know, people with money are evil, or money is the root of all evil. And you just sort of assume that, and you really think about it, you say it all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when you stop and question it, it's like, is money really the root of all evil? Has money ever done awesome things for people or the planet or whatever? And you're like, money does awesome things every day. In fact, I bought a really awesome cup of coffee this morning. It is money.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I think is so interesting. I mean, I think we have been sort of investigating this. We're so focused on the gnarly stuff that money does, but yet every single solitary day, we are given proof of how much freedom and options and joy money brings into our lives. Just honestly, by a cup of coffee, by driving our car, filling it with gas, living in a house, all of that costs money. And that is a joyful thing. So why don't we focus on that?
Now, turning someone who's, I guess, with that kind of mindset into a badass. I know that there's an exercise that really helped me, which was you write a letter to money as if it is a person that you're in a relationship with, right? And I had a funny letter. I don't want to get into it too much, but it was like, baby, you know, I know when you first showed up, I wasn't ready for you, and I might have treated you a little bit kind of like fickly, but now, baby girl, you know, and you start actually realizing that your relationship with money is a lot more fucked up than you think it is, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, is that where it kind of, is that the thing that when people get down to it, that they can't identify money without having those bad connotations?
Well, I think the great thing about the letter is it wakes you up. It gives you that awareness that we were just talking about. So taking the time, and it's so funny because I remember when I first started doing all the, you know, the work on myself and da da da. And I was like, oh, it's going to be so much work. It's going to be so hard. And it's like, the work is really waking your ass up to what's going on. So it's a hell of a lot easier to take 10 minutes and write a letter to money and be like, oh, wow, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust money. I think talking about money makes me feel dirty. I want money all the time, and I'm excited when I make it, but I've got all this underlying negativity around it that I had no idea I even had. That just took me 10 minutes to figure out. Meanwhile, I've spent 10 years not making any money and working my ass off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So
yeah, totally.
That's a big misconception also about all the work that I did and that I talk about in my book and that I'm sure you did, is like it's actually harder to stay broke and stay in struggle and stay clinging to these negative beliefs and yourself.
See, that's it really, right? I mean, I guess change is something that, you know, is unknown, right? And like you said, if you take the 10 minutes, write that letter. I encourage everybody to do it. I could encourage everybody to get this book as well, all your books really. But the thing is, if you do take that 10 minutes out, like you said, it's so eye-opening, and you make all these different revelations and have all these great epiphanies within this one exercise that I think it fueled me actually to kind of do more about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so I want to be clear, like, you don't write the letter and then all of a sudden you get rich.
No, it's not like some crazy Nigerian dude send you an email saying, hey, you know, I'm just trying to send this $5 million around, you know?
Yeah. So, but it is, it really, it's, and it is that change. That's exactly what it is that stops us from making these big, big changes in our lives, is we're scared of the unknown. And, we'd rather cling to our somewhat mediocre to full on crappy lives because they're familiar than, you know, then make big changes and leap into the unknown and, you know, gasp, perhaps fail or look like an idiot or spend money and not get it back or whatever. But you've got to take risks. If you don't take risks, you get to stay exactly where you are.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing to lose really at this point when you think about that kind of thing. Now, when you wrote the first book about being a badass, right? I mean, this, you know, the new book is, I guess, you know, a kind of continuation of the badass motif, right? Mm-hmm. But it's more, you're narrowing the focus with the money thing. With the badass, I thought it was a great, I mean, it's a great turn of phrase, though, isn't it? I mean, badass is, everybody wants to be a badass, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the great thing about badass is kind of like the MF word in New York City. It can mean a million different things to the million different people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's been so funny because it's been translated into all these different languages. I'm so...
What's the most
they think of it in Turkey and Slovakia? Like, what does badass mean there?
You know what's funny? Because I play around a lot of Eastern Europe and places like that. And you know what? They speak better English than some people in New York that I know.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And, like, it's weird because you watch the TV. It's usually in English with subtitles. So I guess badass translates worldwide, though.
I guess it does. Who knew? I am. I almost didn't use that word because of that reason.
Really?
Like, I was like, this is only going to make sense in English-speaking countries, you know, in the great hopes that anyone would give a crap and it would get translated. But I was a little concerned about that, and doesn't seem to be a problem, thank God.
Now, when you first got this idea to, I guess, get into helping yourself, you said there's a little bit of a stigma with it. I never really got into that kind of scene, but you talk about there actually being a scene about it.
The self-help scene?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there's a scene. I mean, and in LA, where I was living at the time, it's a huge scene. It's a lot of, I went to a lot of women's entrepreneurial networking functions, and lots of, you know, self-help authors having seminars and selling their coaching packages there, and, you know, money making seminars and all that stuff. And for me, you know, I'm from New York too. I had huge judgments on it, just like that it was so rah-rah and that they were all swindlers trying to take your money, you know, getting you all pumped up and then being like, okay, great, you can do anything. Now give me $5 trillion and I'll help you. And I really was snarky about all of it, even the books, everything. I was just like, these people are completely, you know, in it for themselves. And, but I went anyway, like I kept showing up, and all I knew at that time was I had spent 40 years trying to do it on my own, you know, insisting that I could figure it out on my own. And finally I was like, bitch, you ain't figuring it out. So you got to get some help. And so I was like, okay, I'll go to these seminars and put a name tag on and take a risk and, you know, see what it's all about. And lo and behold, I met a lot of really amazing coaches and speakers and inspirational people that way. And it was great. Then it was super uncomfortable and totally dorky in my too cool for school opinion.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that because I kind of have that about me as well, but I've learned in my 48 years around that you got to kind of get out of your comfort zone and feel like a nerd and feel like out of place and fail. You know what I mean? Because if you don't screw up, you never know you screwed up. You know what I mean? And then you can't actually find a waypoint to move in a direction that's up, you know? Now, when did that come across to you? Was it pretty much doing the self-help thing and getting like a good background? Because someone was telling me about like linguistics are important as well, like how you say things to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't know too much about it, but from what I understand, it's like, you know, if I say something like, if I get $5 million, I'll, you know, buy my mom a house. But if you say, when I get $5 million, I'll buy my, it's a better way to kind of like have yourself think more positively, right?
Well, think of the energy behind that.
Uh-huh.
And the thing with this self-transformation stuff is it's all so damn subtle.
Yeah.
But it really counts. So if you're like, if I make $5,000 versus when I make $5,000, like you can feel the energy in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that energy, and especially because we use words all damn day long, what you repeat over and over and over, it creates what you believe. And it really sounds super duper woo woo and too easy. But when you start changing how you speak and what you focus on and what you think about, you start to change the way you perceive your reality. And then all this new stuff opens up to you. So this was like, this really is the quote unquote secret, right? That movie, The Secret.
Yeah.
But it is, and I'll tell you right now, I was so grouchy. Like, it can't be that simple, guys. Like, it can't be as simple as changing my thoughts and my words and my focus. You know, it's got, I refuse to believe that I just spent 40 years being broke ass. And it's this easy to change, like, screw you.
But it says something more about you than it does the process, right?
Like, right? Yeah. But it is huge when your attitude changes everything. So the way you speak and the way you think and the way you choose to look at your environment, like right now, there are countless things I could be whining and bitching and moaning about and focusing on and freaking out about and being hopeless about. You know, it's all right there.
Yeah,
Or I could focus on things that are awesome and exciting and give me great hope and inspiration. And where I choose to place my focus changes my energy and changes the way that I perceive my reality. And right there, if you, you know, stop listening to this podcast right now, that is probably the biggest piece of advice. Like, how are you living? How are you choosing to focus? How are you choosing to speak and think? See, pay attention to that stuff because it is large, Marge. Yeah, it really is.
You see, that's the thing that I mean, you said it's so subtle, right? But those little changes, what you choose to focus on, you know, I mean, I'm kind of, I guess, getting around to understanding that I've been doing these things, but not as well as I could have been, you know what I mean? So I know that the energy thing really works in my favor when I am positive and choose to focus on things that are really important and things that I really want to focus on rather than all the bullshit. And I think with what you've done with these books is you make it so easy to understand that it's okay to not have gotten it on the first go. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not so self-critical. A lot of times, if people are trying to give you any kind of advice, especially in this day and age, everybody's like, hey, what the don't give me no advice. What are you talking about? Hey, well, who are you? But the thing is, I think the way you approach it is just so personable. You know what I mean? It's something where it's like, look, I think you say a lot of times, if I can get rich, you can get rich, right? I mean, it's like, it's just a matter of, and I kind of use that ethos when I do a lot of my work as a performer. I'm, look, if I can do it, you can do it. You can enjoy it. Like when I teach people how to do what I do a little bit, that's kind of how you kind of got to do it, you know?
Yeah, because it really, I mean, we're all human and we're all screwed up. Like, believe me, I got plenty of stuff I'm still working on.
Oh yeah, nobody's perfect.
And I forget to focus on the positive and I, you know, talk crap. Like, that's why it's called a practice. So we're always practicing this. So it's not, don't use, you know, the fact that you made a wrong choice or focused in the wrong way or talking badly about yourself. Like, don't use that as another excuse to think you're a big fat loser. You know what I mean? Like, we're all, the key is that you're in the game, that you're even listening to this podcast, that you're, you know, that you're making some changes and you're signing up to do better. And That's it. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, it's like the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, you know, and
exactly.
I always found, especially with in this day and age, I always say that a lot. I always find myself going, what am I talking about? But there is this kind of communal, almost like I was talking about this, like this communal nobility and like we all kind of understand about the good and the bad in the world, but we don't. We're not as smart as our phones and we do a lot of assuming. And it's the thing that when you said it's a practice, which every day you got to practice like it's an instrument. And it is an instrument in a lot of ways because it'll help you get to where you want to be, like a guitar will. If, you know, remember that Foreigner song, Jukebox Hero?
Uh-huh.
All right, now that was my jam when I was a kid, Jen. Like, I'd hear that song, Goosebumps Would Happen. I was like, damn, man, I would love to be that kid, you know, that, you know, listens to the rock and roll outside of Madison Square Garden and hears the band playing and then, like, you know, 10 years, 20 years later, plays Madison Square Garden. And that was, like, my whole thing, right? But I knew that it wouldn't happen with me just snapping my fingers, you know? I knew that I had to practice something every day to do well at it.
Right.
And I'm not really too sure where that was instilled in me. Probably with my mom, right? But yeah. with any kind of like, when I say self-help, I know a lot of people are going to be like, damn, what does that mean? And exactly, I don't really know what it means. But I think self-improvement is probably a better way to put it, right? Because it's something you got to do every day. And over a long period of time, like working out or anything, you get better at it and it gets better. Yeah. You see better results. You know, like I started working out really heavy maybe 6 months ago, right? And I'm starting to see results now. You know, it didn't happen for a long
time.
It didn't happen for a long time. You know, I was like, you know, I quit smoking. I was like, I got to get rid of this gut. I got to do stuff. So eventually I started seeing it, you know. And I think a lot of times people, you know, I think, like I say, in this day and age, people listen to respond a lot of times. And if they don't see immediate results, they think it's almost too difficult to achieve. And that's where they're wrong, I think. And I think in your books, you tell people that in a really good way, that they know that instinctually.
Well, you know, and I used to be a journalist, and I was for a while interviewing really successful entrepreneurs, and the number one thing, I'd be like, so what's your number one secret to success? And everybody, almost everybody responded with tenacity.
Yeah.
They're like, do not give up. You have got to stay the course. Now, there are times when you need to course correct and, mm-hmm. you know, change up how you're doing stuff if it's not working, but you stay the course. And we do live in, you know, it's even more so than ever in an immediate gratification culture. And so, you know, you said 6 months to start seeing results. That's a long time, especially when you're, you know, working out is not always the easiest and funnest thing.
No, it isn't. It's freaking horrible at my age, right? I don't want to do this.
I'm in the same spot.
I don't want to do this.
I'm climbing a bunch of 14ers next month, and I got to get in shape for it. And I was like, I'm going to die on the top of that mountain because I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah, I just signed up for a mini triathlon. I feel you too. I think my wife thinks I'm going to kill myself doing it.
Oh my gosh! But I'm unavailable to be this weakling. It's really important to me because I like to be strong and whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. No, that's great. But I like the way you use that word. I'm unavailable to be a weakling. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Is that like, you know? I guess as you practice your instrument enough, do these like really, you know, do these things really become second nature where you say, I'm not available to be that way? I think that's an awesome turn of phrase.
Thank you. It's about really focusing on what you're going for. So I could focus all day long on how good it feels to lie on that couch and drink a margarita. That is a great thing. The boat's gone, right? Instead of going for the hike that I went on this morning and the hike I'm going on this afternoon to train for this, you know, big 14er strip of mine. Mm-hmm. Instead, I'm focusing on how sore my legs are, but how awesome it feels, how psyched I am that I got my ass out of bed at 7 o'clock and ran up the side of a mountain and that I'm going to be in shape, which means then I can travel the world and go hiking and backpacking in all these places that I want to do that. Because quite frankly, the most important thing to me is being outside and hanging out in nature and seeing cool stuff. And I need to access that with my legs. And if my legs are on a couch all day drinking a margarita, I ain't going there. So, you know, it's about staying focused on the goal and the excitement and the energy around that goal, as opposed to all the excuses that love to worm their way in.
Yeah, you know, we do love ourselves some excuses.
Oh, yeah.
Stay tuned and stay classy. There's even more dope stuff coming your way.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, what would Mark Twain say? He said a lot of stuff, actually. But he said common sense isn't so common, right? We get a lot of that. I imagine if you open up a smartphone, you get bombarded by knuckleheads doing a lot of knucklehead stuff. But, I mean, I think what I'm trying to ask is when people are definitely, it's easier for them to sit on that couch than actually achieve something. Do you think they really have to have a goal? They always say, you don't know what you want unless you know what you want. You're not going to get what you want unless you know what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that people have to solidify in their minds before they start this journey?
I think they have to solidify something. Mm-hmm. So the big misconception and the huge roadblock is I don't know what I want, right? So yeah. Then end of game. If you have to know everything you want, end of game, if you don't know what you want, right? And I, believe me, I was the queen of I don't know. I should have it tattooed on my forehead. I lived that way forever. So, and I let it stop me. And so it wasn't until I was like, okay, I don't know what I want, but I do know some things about what I do want. So, you know, I was a freelance writer, I was broke, I was a musician, I spent way too much time alone, you know, writing and practicing whatever. So I knew I wanted to have a reason to leave the house and put on a bra and brush my hair and stuff like that. I knew I wanted to help other people, and I knew I wanted to be creative, and I knew I wanted to make money. That was it. That's all I had when I started. But I knew those things. And so what I did, instead of focusing on, I don't know, right, where are you going to place your focus? I started focusing on what I did know and the energy that that gave me. Because if you focus on I don't know, it's such a wet blanket of energy, right? So if you focus on what you do know and like, I want to be out of the house, I want to be hanging out with other people and helping them, like, and making money, that energetic of that was so much better. So it got my ass off the couch. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this meeting, even though it seems weird, but it's out of the house. It's going to, you know, is it going to meet the things that I do know and help me go towards that? So you start where you're at. Don't expect yourself to know everything, because I do think this is another really unhelpful thing that our society beats into our brain, is that you've got to know what you're doing and you've got to make a plan around, you know, you have to have that lightning bolt of knowledge of who you are. And it's like, come on. I know like 3 people who know who they are early on. The rest of us are just sort of like fumbling around playing with our lips trying to figure it out.
How come we're embarrassed to admit that?
Because we're raised to believe you're supposed to know what you're doing. Just the way you're raised to believe money is bad. Like, we just automatically take that as the gospel, and it stops us dead in our tracks. So just do what you know how to do, but you got to do it. And this is a big thing too. Sitting around trying to figure it out, you will get precisely nowhere. Getting in the game, just getting out there and taking action and doing stuff that feels kind of right. Maybe you're not sure it's 100% right. You get answers through doing.
Yeah.
So show up, take some risks. Maybe it is the wrong step, but at least you'll freaking know. Sitting around trying to figure it out, you will get nowhere fast.
Yeah. What's with us having a really big problem with, you know, sitting around and trying to, you know, exactly catch lightning in a bottle? And not actually going out and failing. And through, I guess, adversity, everybody finds a little bit of strength, right? But also you find you're in a spot where you can actually see your goal either behind you, above you, whatever. You know, you can actually see it from a time when you mess up. Why are we so afraid we don't want to mess up and stuff? Like, it's going to kill us or something.
I know, right? Shame, pride.
Yeah, where do we get so prideful? I mean, is this a generational thing? Because people give, like, these young kids, these millennials, a hard time, right? But, you know, the millennials, before them, there was us, right? And it's not like we gave them such a great example to play with. Do you think it's because we're kind of just, like, a little laissez-faire about stuff?
I don't understand that question.
Well, I mean, it'd be like, you know, I know I'm getting a little esoteric here, but...
That's okay, no.
That's cool, it happens a lot, man, trust me. No, but, like, you know, like, when I was growing up, right? And I'm a little bit older than you, but it was one of those things where I saw like Nixon and the whole, he gave up the presidency and all these kind of like things in the United States that we thought were, you know, institutions kind of crumble around us and stuff. So there was, you know, also the nuclear war, hot, cold war thing happening at the same time. And there was like a whole new set of shit yourself worries that came out of that, right? So you had like, you know, even in the advent of terrorism, I mean, back in the 70s, they were like the PLO and all the dudes doing crazy shit around. And that was kind of like, you know, it made everybody seem a little bit more like, ah, the dream kind of, the head got blown, you know what I'm saying? It's like, nah, everything's kind of weird now. And did we kind of, did we take that postmodernism crap too far and just don't believe in anything, this whole nihilist idea?
I have no idea. I mean, I honestly believe that every generation has stuff like that. You know, I hear this all the time from older people that are just like, yeah, you know, we thought just the way that we're now, you know, terrified of climate change and all the terrorist stuff. And, you know, there's so much unrest in the world that, you know, it's scary to bring children into the world now because of, you know, will there even be a planet in 20 years? Will there be water? And it seems very real to me, and I'm certainly very scared about a lot of that, but you hear a lot from everybody, we thought our generation was the last one too, which sort of gives me hope, but it also makes you think, wow, humans have been fucked up forever.
See, that's the thing, I mean, I kind of understand, but, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead, leave me interrupt.
That's it, done.
Well, and I hear you there, that's a great way, I guess, to kind of summarize, like, every generation thinks they have it bad, right? So I guess it's just different kind of ideas. Like, you know, you look at a young kid, you know, and they're wrapped up in their social media ideas of what reality is. And we have our own kind of like, I guess we look at it as something that I guess is technology, and they look at it as something that's just a means to an end. So I guess
it's a very natural part of their reality right now. You know, to us, it's a whole different perspective.
Now, with what you do, I mean, making a badass in this day and age, which I think you do precisely, is there like an ethos that a badass should have in 2017?
I mean, I think I don't necessarily think it's different over time, because I think it's more about human ability to choose. It really comes down to that. So whatever time you're living, whatever reality you're living in, I mean, right now, you know, I'm living in a certain reality. There are people who have a hell of a lot more challenges than I did coming up. And there's a hell of a lot more people who had it way better than I did, you know, less challenges, whatever. So I think it's sort of a universal, timeless message of the power that we all have in us to choose how we perceive, how we think, how we act, how we show up, who we're being. And that that really is what it all boils down to, is your choice in how you're living your life.
Now, do you think, like you mentioned before, just in that last sentence, you were talking about showing up. And I was always told when I was young, right? Doesn't matter if you're really good at something or really bad at something. If you're showing up, that's like 50% of it right there. Is that,
totally.
Is that, I mean, that's a, I guess that's a thing that's kind of like through the ages. Just show up, dude, you'll be fine. But, you know, is that something that people have a tendency to need a little bit of a kick in the butt to do?
Well, I think they don't show up because they haven't figured it all out yet. They don't show up because they don't want to fail. They don't show up because they don't have the money. They don't show up because they don't know what they're doing. You know, all of these excuses will keep you exactly where you're at. And it's like, yeah, we could all say that. How bad do you want it?
Yeah.
Take some damn risks. Take out a loan. Look like an idiot. You know, show up when you have absolutely no idea what you're doing and figure it out. So it really comes down to, are you, how badly do you want it?
Indeed. I think that's a great way to kind of talk about what you do, right? Because I think what you've kind of done, you're the, I guess, the conduit to a lot of the, what is it, the self-improvement side of things, and bring it back to, like, I don't want to say normal people, because it makes me sound like I'm being like a little bit dicky to the self-improvement people, but you know, when people talk about but you know, there's like a stigma there with like self-help, and I know that you've talked about that before, and people think, oh, if I do that, they're kind of admitting something that's not good in my life, you know, and everybody thinks that I'm a jerk or I'm failing or whatever. But once you kind of do that and show up and start the process, I mean, that makes your life a little bit better. Just doing that, just feeling a little bit of pride for trying to change your situation.
Yeah, and you know, and again, it's about focusing on the fact, like, I'm getting, you know, if you want to lose weight, you don't focus on the fact that you're overweight. You focus on the fact you're getting in shape and you're excited and you love your body and you're, you know, grateful to be on planet Earth in a human body, and you're going to take care of that body. Like, you know, what do you, it all depends on what you choose to focus on.
Yeah, when people do choose to focus on certain realities, I mean, like you said, there are a million of them. We choose the ones we kind of playing with. Do you think there's almost a communal tendency to kind of be a little bit more doom and gloom?
Yes.
Now, we
totally live in a fear-based society, and that's another one that's I don't know why, and I suspect it is because, I'm sure it's out of fear of losing power. I feel like you can really control lots of people if you keep them terrified. So, you know, out of the original fear of humans for whatever reason, and I have researched this, not at all, but that's sort of the conclusion I've come to, is, you know, why are we such a fear-based society? I mean, life sure as hell is scary. I mean, right now we are on a tiny pinprick of a planet out in outer space with, you know, really, let's think about that for 2 seconds. You'd be under your bed for the rest of your life if you focused on that, right? Yeah. So, you know, there's plenty of stuff to be scared of, but there's also so much to rejoice about and be grateful for, and, you know, and I just think that we tend to focus on the fear stuff more. And so then it really is, and this is sort of, I'm glad you brought up going to the gym, because this is why we've got to stay at what I call the spiritual gym.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to keep that muscle strong, because if you just hang out and sort of, you know, have things here or there that you're doing better, you've got to make it like a workout practice. You want to get in shape, you want to lose that beer gut, you want to climb mountains, you got to make it a practice, and you got to show up. And you've got to counteract the way that you usually are. We're more inclined to lie around and be lazy because it's, you don't got to sweat for that. We're more inclined to be fearful because it's easy, because that's what everybody else is. You want to make positive change in your life, you got to sort of go against that grain. And in order to do that, it's really a habit. So, and it doesn't need to be a big freaking deal. Like, honestly, working out 30 minutes a day can make huge change in your life. Waking up every day and reading a self-help book, or listening to inspirational CDs, or hanging out with people who are kicking ass and excited about life instead of fearful, that makes a humongous difference. So it's about getting into the habit and making a routine and being very serious about doing the work that will make the real changes.
Now, do you think, like, I guess that's vigilance, right? I mean, to anything that you really care about and want to achieve, you have to be vigilant in the endeavor, right? So the vigilant, almost being hyper vigilant, really, right? So every day you mm-hmm. gotta get in the fight, show up, be there, mm-hmm. be present. You know, have you ever heard of a guy named Jocko Willink?
No.
All right, this dude's pretty. The only reason I bring him up is because he is kind of like, in a lot of ways, you and him are saying the same kind of thing, but he says it a very different way. And he's a former Navy SEAL officer. And if you have a moment, check out YouTube. He's just really intense. But a lot of the ideas behind it are the kind of the same thing. You got to show up. You got to be present. He's a little bit, he barks a lot because he's a former commando guy, right? But it was kind of one of those things where the two of you actually spoke to me, and you hit the same guitar chord, you know what I mean? And as a musician, you know, like, if you have a favorite chord, be what it is, you know, D minor, the saddest of all keys, whatever, man. So so the two of you both hit the same chord with me, and I thought what I found familiar about both of y'all, because I think I kind of know people like you who speak plainly, you know what I mean? And with too much, I guess with too much eloquence comes, I don't mean that you're ineloquent at all, please don't take it that way, but I think when people fancy up a lot of language and make people feel like they don't know what they're doing, it kind of muddles the process of actually trying to help people and motivate them.
Yeah, and I also do think that we all respond to different voices and different teachers and different messaging, because it's all the same crap, but it really is who speaks your language and who makes the light go on for you. So apparently getting yelled at and, you know, and curse words work for you.
No, you know what, you mentioned on the word teaching and teachers. I think it's important to also, like, who are the teachers that really floated your boat that you can talk about?
You know, honestly, it's kind of funny, but quite frankly, like, I couldn't find a lot of books written by a lot of women about money, because, again, my big thing was around money, so it was all these old white guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Wallace Bottles, who wrote The Science of Getting Rich and Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. They were great. I love Byron Katie's work. This is, she wrote a book called Loving What Is. And honestly, the teachers who spoke the loudest to me are the ones who are the most pithy, because I am an impatient person. And anybody who explains something too many times, I'm done, I'm out. And so, and Byron Katie's work, it's like four questions you got to ask yourself to change your perception, to change a lot of stuff in your life. Yeah, so those guys. I love Louise Hay. She's super woo-woo, but she was, you know, one of my early...
Wait, hold on. What's woo-woo, Jen?
Woo-woo is when it's super love yourself. And, and you know, and I freaking put love yourself in every single chapter of my book. So, you know, I am guilty as charged. But it's more earnest and not irreverent and very sincere. And I don't know, what is woo-woo? That's a great question.
No, I just, you know, I hear words, I love them, you know, so I'm always like, what does that word mean? Because everybody has different interpretations of stuff.
Look that up in the dictionary and see what they say.
Yeah, well, woo-woo is probably something completely different than what we think it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably a breed of dog. I don't know.
So was it important for you to be motivated by like a really varied bunch of different people? Because it sounded like the people you're just talking about, you started with the rich white guys and you started getting into woo-woo. So it seems like you also respond to a lot of different kind of ideas.
You know, I started reading the books. That was my first thing, was reading the books and becoming aware of waking up to my crap and all of my autopilot beliefs and starting to question the way that I viewed the world. So the books, you know, when I say the books, it's like Byron Katie, Louise Hay, Marianne Williamson, Wallace Waddles, all that. So I started just any self-help book I could get my hand on, I read, regardless of the fact that I thought it was cheesy or goobery or whatever. I was like, you know what? I'm sick of my present reality, so I don't care what the hell it takes. So that's where I started. And then I started opening up my consciousness to, okay, so money is clearly the thing I want to work on. Where can I learn more about making money? And that's when I started seeing online, you know, these money making seminars, you know, high fiving people in the crowd and screaming, I'm a millionaire, blah, like,
yeah,
whatever.
What's that about? What's that about?
Yeah. And so, but the thing is, I was like, all right, it is cheesy. I am horrified. If any of my friends catch me in here, I'm screwed. My street cred is down the toilet. Like, but what was more important to me at that point, I mean, all my life, the most important thing was being cool and, you know, arrogantly insisting that I could figure it out on my own and knowing and being right that it was hard to make money and that you can't make money as a writer and blah, blah, blah. It finally became more important to me to make money. So all of my excuses became less important. All of my need to be right and my need to, you know, struggle and my need to be cool or whatever, that was overridden by my need to be successful and to get out of my current reality. So I didn't care what the hell I had to do. I did it.
When you were doing that weird shit, were you thinking to yourself, you know what, I'm definitely going to be making some money because I'm willing to do this kind of thing. I'm willing to go through this kind of uncomfortable stuff. So that gives you, does it like bolster you to the point where you're like, yeah, I'm fucking doing this shit, you know? Because it seems like, to me, when I'm in situations that are very similar to that, I can't say it was in the exact ones, I kind of go like, you know, okay, this is what I'm in for. I'm in for a penny. I'm in for a pound. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I honestly don't think at that point I even believed that or knew that. All I knew was this is the next step I'm taking. I don't know where this is going to lead. I hope to God I can make money. I, you know, it took me a long time. You know what? Honestly, it probably wasn't until I started making really good money that I could believe, that I honestly believed that it was real and that it could happen for me. I think in the beginning, I was just in that moment like, okay, I'm just going to keep trying this. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. And somewhere deep down, I must have believed that I could make money because otherwise I never would have bothered. Mm-hmm. But in the early days, I don't think I had made, that's an interesting point. I don't think I had made that connection to, you know, if I'm willing to put on a name tag and hug this stranger next to me and tell him, you know, he has a millionaire mind. I don't, you know, I can do anything. I think, yeah. I was just like, all right, I'm in this fucking weird ass seminar. I'm doing it. I don't know where it's leading.
Now, you seem like you always trusted yourself though. And that's an important thing for people. Like I trusted myself because I was 17. I enlisted in the Marines. I was doing crazy things and had to trust myself physically with my life. But a lot of people, like you probably know a lot of people that don't trust themselves to stick with something and stay in the game or show up every day because they might think they're wrong.
All I know is that I really wanted it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was like, what was your big turning point? I didn't have a big turning point. I don't think most people, you know, get evicted or get dumped by the love of their life for being a big fat loser or, you know, survive some horrible disease and suddenly the light bulb goes on. I think for most of us, you just have to realize that you have a very finite amount of time on planet Earth as the you that is you.
Yeah.
And it is up to you how you're going to spend it. And so I think I just really, I mean, there's something about being 40 and living in a converted garage and just being like, I mean, really, my house at the time was like, it was a one car garage. Let's just put it that way. Not a two car garage. So, you know, and I was like, really? And this is why I call my books, You Are a Badass, because I know deep down everybody really is, because we all have the ability to create what we desire. And that is freaking badass. So to have this knowing deep down that I could be doing so much better and I wasn't, finally just became too painful and too unacceptable. I was like, no. I can't do this anymore. So for me, and quite frankly, it was about the money, but even more than the money, it was about that Jen Sincero on Earth being who I'm meant to be. I don't want to be somebody who's settling, who's focusing on how hard it is to do A, B, and C and how I can't do this because of that. That's not who I want to be. So for me, it really was way more about stepping into it and going for it and living an exciting life and feeling like I was living up to my potential and being excited about life instead of wallowing around in my mediocrity. So, you know, and the money was also important. I don't want to say that wasn't important because that gave me the options and freedom to live the life I want to live. So, but I do think that you have to get to that point where you're unavailable to be living how you're living.
No, I'll tell you, you are an inspiration, Jen.
Thank you.
It's awesome hearing you speak. I'm glad we had this conversation. Hopefully we'll be able to meet up at some point.
No, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love to hang with you. Maybe have a drink of, you said you like margaritas, so.
Yeah?
Yeah, we have these Fun Loving Criminals drinks that are called Fun Loving Criminals, so we remember the name.
Oh, I would love Fun Loving Criminals.
We'll definitely try to cross paths. You're out in New Mexico way, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure your tour comes through Santa Fe. Never.
Well, you know what? I mean, I'm trying to be in L.A. because the Criminals are doing a new record, and we're going to try to mix it out in L.A.
Okay.
Just because we figured we've never done that. So we used to go to Hawaii to do the records, but now we're just going to go to L.A.
Wise.
Yeah, we figured we'll get, you know, get like a big old place out in Malibu, have all the kids running around like crazy out there.
Oh,
but yeah,
congratulations on that. I mean, talk about living a badass life. That is so exciting.
You know, I thank you. And one of the things that I the reason I stay inspired is because every day I wake up and I say, hey, you know what? I could be not doing this. I could be doing something that I completely fucking hate. And I have been that guy that I was doing stuff that I completely fucking hated. So I remember it. And when I first got turned on to you, you know, I'll tell you, I'll tell you, you know, you're Sincero, you're an Italian lady. I understand that with that comes a lot of sensibilities that a lot of people don't fulfill. You know what I mean? Like, your sensibilities are there and they're awesome. And I think, you know, that's why I think you're such an inspiration. And I think that you know, when we hang out, we should, you know, have a couple of margaritas and make it nice.
And I'll make you a big bowl of pasta.
Oh, well, you know.
That's another part of the Italian sensibility.
Oh, yeah, well, I could use a big bowl of pasta. I haven't had one in a while. But, hey, stay paid, Jen. I appreciate you taking the time to hang with me.
Likewise. This was really, really fun. I really appreciate it. Hey,
thank you very much. Okay. You have a good day.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah. I told you that one was a little different. I hope you took some of that good advice. Let me know on Twitter if you write that letter to your money, because Cash Money be waiting for your letter. Not the DJ, my G, but the actual thing. Okay, so this is the part where I usually tell you who's coming up next and what we've got doozies lined up. But right now, we're still playing with some details on the schedule, perfecting the mix for you. So stay tuned, subscribe to the pod on your favorite podcast app, and check me out on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news about who's coming out next. So friends, until next time, y'all stay classy. Oh,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.